I'm here today, day before. We're talking about the NBA. So I think that the Spurs-Rockets game was really good. I'm glad there was a close game in that series because it seemed like the Rockets and the Spurs for the entirety of the series have been taking turns blowing each other out. But before we get into all of that, Dave, like, go ahead, say your Twitter handle, talk a little bit about what you do, talk about your podcast.
So Twitter is at Coach Dave Dufour. I love how you just launch, you just start recording and don't let me know. This is like the third time we've done this. The Twitter handle.
You've said on your show that that's the way to do it.
I agree.
You gotta get used to the running start, man.
And I did it. I've done it the last two episodes and I love it.
it's not so easy when you're not the person behind the control panel. Right. So, all right, at Coach Dave.
You need like an on-air light behind you, so I know when we're live.
I have one up here. I should do that. Okay. Yeah, but
yeah, it's not a camera. Anyway, so at Coach Dave Dufour, I do a lot of stuff with Coach Nick over at B-Ball Breakdown. We do at least weekly podcasts. Sometimes last week we did three. You know, I was just in LA and we did a bunch of live shows on Periscope, which we're trying to do more of. And then I have my own podcast on the NBA with Coach Dave. Shout out to Chris for helping me with the rebrand. You know, I talked about it a little bit in the lead in to my newest podcast because it's the first one after I made the name change. And it's generic, but it's okay. Like, because it is what it is. Like the old name of the show. Right. And the old name of the show didn't really describe what the hell the show was. Like, you know, you wouldn't have any idea. Like, I could be talking about like how basketballs are made. Right. Like, there was really nothing to describe what the show was about. Like, this is how Wilson constructs their padded balls. You know?
Yeah. Anyway. And like, you can get away with that type of stuff if you're like Bill Simmons or something. You know, they just launched their gambling show or whatever. And it's like best odds or something that you wouldn't,
against all odds. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you wouldn't know that that was about gambling, but it's The Ringer though. You know, it's Bill Simmons.
Yeah, and they're going to have a million subscribers.
Right.
First day.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, so Larry Wilmore podcast.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Now we can transition into Rocket Spurs. I really like and am really interested about how spacing works into the game. And when you talk about 3-on-3 too, really the optimal way of, it seems like, playing 5-on-5 basketball was sort of started by D-Wade, LeBron, Chris Bosh, and that would be the three-man stuff, right? You can do everything in basketball with three guys, and then Ray Allen, Shane Battier just posted up in the corners.
Right, yeah. So, like, I mean, basically, this is why, you know, when people talk about the triangle offense, I think they don't understand. Like, when they knock the triangle, understand.
Like, they don't get that it's just not, like, one big triangle. You're forming new triangles on each side of the court, depending on where the ball is.
Absolutely. As you move. And so like with three good players, you can have a triangle and shooter spot up. And so the Warriors run triangle actions for threes. The problem is that Phil Jackson idea of the triangle results in a lot of mid range.
Yeah.
And, you know, he hasn't done a good job of getting triangle guards. You know, you need guys that can shoot to play the triangle.
Tilikina.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a guy who's, you know, I've been digging into the stats and the tape a little bit. Talking to my buddy Cole Zwicker about him.
Hey, Cole Zwicker. And, he's got a podcast on Almighty Baller Radio. You know that? What's on Draft?
I did not know that.
You got to dive into Almighty Baller Radio. Listen to some of the shows. They're great.
I'm gonna make it my homepage.
Yeah.
for whatever that's worth. I just think that, like, you know, it's a lack of understanding about the basic concept of basketball, and it's kind of you know, it's guys who do know about basketball that have really made it bad. Like, you know, people triangle, and I'm not like uber triangle. Like, I have elements of the triangle in the offenses I coach, but it depends on what my personnel looks like. I run some 1-4, I run some motion weak, I run some flex. Like, I like to vary, you know, what we're doing. But the triangle is in almost every modern offense because it's just three guys making a triangle, right? And then you do cuts and handoffs and screens out of that. So,
well, yeah, if the Spurs are isoing Kawhi, they're probably running some variation of a triangle set.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you know what? Even when they are doing isolation, they wind up with a natural triangle on the weak side.
Well, because they run a lot of two bigs. And, you know, I think that that's part of the reason why people don't like the idea of a triangle is because it forces this sort of floppy thing. You know, it forces like a high-low game between your two bigs. And two bigs aren't optimal. It doesn't seem like it anyways. But I feel
when you've got a big, but when you got a big like Pau Gasol, he's a big, right? But he steps out and shoots threes. So you can stick him in the corner. Yeah. I mean, you can stick him in the corner. Ryan Anderson is a big. You can stick him in the corner, or you can stick him 30 feet away, right? Like, so that's the evolution of that, right? Is that having those bigs that can step out and shoot. Honestly, Pau Gasol at this point in the playoffs, every time he takes a three, I feel like it's going in. He's hit so many, especially early in the game.
He's shooting like 52% from three.
It's insane, man.
Yeah, his touch is great. And, you know, it's all spot up, though, which is an interesting thing because, I mean, he can't do pretty much anything off the dribble from long range. He really just needs to set up his shot, basically like, you know, Blake Griffin's like set up shot, like I mean, it's a lot better than it, but it's that same type of thing. Or Amir Johnson. Right. But I mean, that's a mechanism they need in their offense. And yeah, I think you're right, but it doesn't seem like that general free throw line type of thing is optimal right now. And I think that limits a lot of what the triangle does. For the most part, because you could sort of try to maybe do some like DHO stuff and try to make some space with that. But really, unless you, like the Spurs, have two guys like LaMarcus and Pau who are going to knock down shots from a little bit further out, you know, then it's hard to make it work. I mean, even I feel like there was a shelf life to Thibodeau sort of triangle run stuff, because Taj Gibson developed a mid-range jump shot to make it work, same as Joakim, but it just wasn't quite enough, you know?
Yeah, well, and even LaMarcus at this stage is not like the knockdown mid-range guy that he was, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And
I don't know why.
If you have a guy – yeah. I could talk about the LaMarcus Aldridge signing for hours.
All right. What's wrong with LaMarcus?
Okay, so LaMarcus, he's a high volume, low efficiency scorer, right? Like, I mean, it's just the truth. Like, now his defensive stuff is so much better in San Antonio, and a lot of that's effort. You know, like he's actually putting in effort and being really active. So he's done really great on that end. But we've watched the sort of regression, and this isn't all his fault. You know, part of it is Pop plays him with Pau and Kawhi, who also like to have the ball in similar spaces. So you get a lot of times you get some funky spacing, but you know, there's no reason that, and in this series, we've seen this a lot. When Eric Gordon is guarding freaking LaMarcus on the block, you know, because he gets caught on a switch and LaMarcus shoots a fucking 14 foot fadeaway. Sorry about the F bomb. I don't know if that's allowed here.
No, that's good.
Okay, when he shoots that 14-foot fadeaway, that's
why?
Come on.
Yeah, like why?
Why is he doing it? No, I mean, you're 6'11", you're 250 pounds or whatever, and
just
Eric Gordon
turn
is,
on,
you know,
turn on the motor, man. Yeah. Just plow through it.
Well, remember, he used to have that nice little jump hook where he'd drop the shoulder and kind of get running out like into the middle of the lane, and that has almost completely disappeared. It's just gone from his game.
Yeah, it's weird. And, you know, I don't knock the LaMarcus Aldridge signing because I think that it's going to have value. And ultimately, that's why you sign. I think that's why you sign a free agency or sign players in free agency, is because even if it doesn't work out, as long as you feel like you can move him for value, then it's good. And don't you feel like you could maybe put LaMarcus together with like a first round pick and maybe like Danny Green and make a move for like a Paul George? I mean, not a Paul George.
Danny Green is
someone
untouchable.
Really good.
Danny Green's untouchable. There's no way they're
Danny
trading
Green
Danny.
Is amazing. I love
He's
Danny
fan.
Green.
Playoff Danny Green. I had this conversation the other day. Playoff Danny Green is right up there with Michael Jordan.
Okay.
Right?
Like, Dave, let me be the Padawan who's going to teach the master. Let me be a non-coach, and I'm going to teach you something, a little something about coaching. All right, here's how the Spurs defense works, and it's genius, right?
Okay.
What they do, and the reason why they can have a 40-year-old Tim Duncan have ostensibly the best rim protection stats in the league, and why they can make Pau Gasol work and have the best defense in the league again, even though it's Pau Gasol and LaMarcus Aldridge, is because what they've done is taken the free safety idea, the Luol Deng thing, the speaking of Paul George, the Paul George thing.
Yeah.
They've done that, and they've split the court down the middle so that as much as they can, they've got Danny Green on one side and Kawhi on the other side, and they'll dig on any drive. They'll get involved no matter what. And what I call it, man, instead of playing on a string, it's tug of war. Because the two of them basically just push each other back and forth depending on the play action, right?
Yeah.
And and pull each other where right?
That's a fantastic observation. And you know, the other thing is what it does is it allows you to take Powell or Tim Duncan and he can completely zone up.
Right.
All he has to do is follow those guys. Right. So, you know, he just walks back and forth across the lane. And, you know, like, I mean, I actually wrote about this last fall in a thing that never got published anywhere when I was talking about, I really thought their defense was going to take a huge step back just because Powell is bad. I mean, Powell's bad at defense. Right. And I didn't know what Pop was going to, I didn't know if Pop would use him in the same way he used Tim Duncan. And, you know, I talked about using him to zone up that way. Now, what they've done is, like you said, I love that tug of war. That's a great line. And I won't steal it without giving you credit. But what they've done is they've gone to the extreme zoning him up because Powell can, I mean, he's 7 feet tall. He can block shots. He's not a bad shot.
Well, they drop him all the way back. They drop more than really any other defense in the league. And I feel like the reason why that's out of vogue is because of the idea that Russell Westbrook or John Wall is going to pull up and hit a, you know, either a floater or I really like more the whole point guard thing pulling up from like 12 feet, like what Chris Paul sort of popularized. And you can't just always drop on that unless you've got Danny Green and Kawhi fucking things up every time you try to do something like that.
That's right. Well, and see, this is why I love like those two with Jonathan Simmons and like Patty Mills or DeJounte Murray. And then what you've got is you've got this super long, not when Mills is out there, but when Murray's out there, you get this long, switchy, athletic four guys, right, that can all do that. Now, Murray and Simmons are not nearly on the Green and Kawhi level, but, you know, like they're good athletes and, you know, within that system it's pretty easy. And then you have your free safety back there. Powell plays like under the backboard a lot of times. Yeah. It's insane how deep he plays. And then he's able to sneak in, you know, on the
Well, you actually might have been about to say that. Is that's why they have this defense that is one of the best defenses in the league, but they also kill it on the glass because they've got two bigs and they're dropping way back.
Exactly. Right. And so I was about to say, you know, he's able to sneak in and get a lot of rebounds.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting.
The Spurs. It's great.
Yeah. The Spurs are great. Although, you know, they more this year than any other year I can remember, their offense has started to look a little stuck in the mud. And this is, to me, this is indicative of just the way the team is built. Like there's not a lot around Kawhi. And if LaMarcus is not hitting, I mean, I watched him miss in game one. I watched him miss like four or five wide open pick and pops. And if he's not hitting that shot, I just don't see where his value is.
Well, you talk about like stuck in the mud. They're playing fucking David Lee a lot of minutes. And it's because, and we saw a few of these plays last night. It's because he's got that Spurs ethos, that sort of thing that really makes the Warriors tick beyond just like being the best shooting team ever. But there's so much movement and there's five guys on the floor at any given time who can hit someone with a pass. And basically David Lee is like a homeless man's version of Boris Diaw.
I was just about to say,
LaMarcus hasn't figured that out.
Right. He is a much less talented version of Boris Diaw. Man, this is why I love when we get a chance to talk, because like I feel like you see some of these little nuances in the same way that I do. So David Lee actually was pretty good this year. His defense was actually pretty good. And he gets out there against the Rockets and he just can't hang like physically. You know, like he can't guard Ryan Anderson 30 feet from the basket.
Well, right, there's defense. I think offensively he's sort of an important cog because I think part of it is because he came from the Warriors. You know?
Oh, yeah,
I mean, the Warriors absolutely are basically doing a more spread version of what the Spurs are doing, which is unsurprising because of Kerr's roots. I mean, coming from San Antonio.
Yeah. And, I mean, and I'm not shocked that he wasn't as good in Dallas and Boston because they don't do that.
Yeah. I think he was okay in Dallas, but he wasn't being optimized in the way that Coach Pop tends to do with these guys. You know, the big thing that Pop needs to figure out, he needs to find his Draymond, because he really made it work with Boris Diaw, and Boris Diaw was basically like the proto Draymond in a lot of ways, right? And
yeah, remember when he guarded LeBron and like shut him down? I mean, it was, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, who's that guy who's going to play the four so that the Spurs can keep the nice things about, you know, you talk about triangle, right? Like, you can get a lot of great ball movement from that high post, right? And you just need someone who doesn't have to be in that role. And you need someone who can pass a hell of a lot better than LaMarcus. Because I think you can have a guy like LaMarcus, but he needs to be the center in this system. He needs to be like the Zaza, basically. I mean, you can like move more touches through him. He can shoot instead of all the times that Zaza makes nifty little passes. And it's fine if he's a black hole. You can have a couple of guys who, like Danny Green, is just basically a Klay Thompson guy. He's going to put up a shot if he's open from three, and he's really not going to move it most of the time anyways. And you can have at least one other guy who is basically a black hole, but I do feel like there is that thing happening with the Spurs stagnating a little bit that, I mean, you see how it could change when Jonathan Simmons is out there, actually, when they do start to like make it breathe. And I mean, Manu last night, he was like the perfect example of sort of the player that we're talking about that isn't like Ricky Rubio, but he's going to make the right move anyways. He's going to make the intelligent play.
Well, you know, I like, my hopes were that Kyle Anderson was going to be that guy. Like, I saw Kyle Anderson
say that,
perfect understudy for Boris Diaw. They're very similar. Like, Kyle Anderson, they call him slow-mo, but he has like a really nifty game. He can step out and shoot threes. He can handle the ball. And his defense isn't atrocious. The problem is Pop just doesn't trust these guys.
I think
Kyle
Anderson's defense is pretty bad.
I'm not saying, look, he's not Draymond Green, but he's not, it's not, Russell Westbrook.
I think he's like engaged. Unplayable.
Really?
He's so slow. He gets beat by his man, and like in the Spurs defense, you can't force rotations that much and have things but not fall apart.
I think it's because Pop hasn't playing guarding wings too often. He's not a wing. He's a four. You know, like he's a four or a really small five, which is a lineup that I wouldn't hate to see. You're not going to have much rim protection, quote unquote, but at least you have another guy who's going to move the basketball. Instead, he's been using David Lee in that spot. And I just would, to me, it'd be more interesting to see, you know, Kyle Anderson or, you know, really throw a wrench in their plans. Why don't you just play Kawhi as the nominal five? And, you know, when they're against those Ryan Anderson lineups, have Kawhi out there, you know, guarding Ryan Anderson and force him to take Ryan Anderson way away from the basket. And then you've basically got, you know, run your most athletic lineup against those really small ball lineups that the Rockets have been putting out there and see what happens. Of course, you know, the Spurs also have a 3-2 lead in the series, so we're not going to see anything interesting in the next game.
Well, yeah, you know, I like what the Spurs have been. I like the way that they've been responding to Ryan Anderson, because they really whipped their ass last game, or game four.
Game four.
And in game five, what they started to do is basically put quicker guys on Ryan Anderson, because it's just like you have to have someone there. And if you're going to try to, you know, get Ryan Anderson off of a few screens, like try to shake a defender, it's not even so much about like actually getting a good contest. It's just making sure that there is a contest and that that guy's there. And I feel like Patty Mills could cover Ryan Anderson for the most part. I mean, it's sort of like with what Bruce Bowen always did, or like what Steven Jackson did to Dirk in that 07 series, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, for players like that who are going to take those deep threes and who are big men, it's just about making sure that they don't shake loose. It's about like David Lee can't be fucking covering Ryan Anderson.
Right, you know? Because Ryan Anderson can just beat him back door if he gets
and
far enough.
And be wide open. You have to like at least have someone who's like just sort of up there, you know? And like that, I think that worked for the Spurs last game. And I don't think that there's really a counterpunch that D'Antoni has going into game six.
Especially without Nene.
Yeah.
I think the Nene injury is huge. I mean, they only played seven guys last night. And you know, D'Antoni's only going to play eight or nine. I know that. You know, that's his MO. But losing Nene for them is huge. I think they're going to have to play Decker.
Yeah, he's got like a thumb injury or something.
He had something. I think he had some kind of procedure. But you know, he played okay in the OKC series after he came back. And I don't know, man. He's got to figure something out. Harrell probably needs to get some minutes. I don't know. It sucks, man. Like, the Nene injury is huge. And I think that the Rockets probably cannot win the series at this point without Nene. Like, Nene was owning LaMarcus Aldridge. It wasn't even close.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a real bummer. But I'm not sure what adjustment D'Antoni can make just because of the lack of personnel.
Oh, yeah. You need an A. I definitely see that. And it's been interesting. There hasn't been as much Haka Capella as I expected. I expected that would keep Capella off the court a little bit. But what you've seen instead is what's keeping Capella off the court is that he's like 23. It's that he's like, he's not really got his big boy britches on yet. He hasn't really, I mean, for as slow as Powell has gotten and for as bad as LaMarcus has been, Capella still, I mean, they've got some time on them. They've got the wily tricks that'll shake a guy like Capella off go ahead.
He had a great first game.
Capella?
His first game was, Capella was great in that first game.
Yeah, well, that's sort of what I'm saying. I mean, I think that you can figure out Capella. And that's always been my concern about Capella. And I talked about this with Salman Ali, who hosts Red Nation Hoops. Check it out, almightyballer.com. and I was saying, man, what the Rockets cannot do is drop $20 million on Clint Capella, because it's like a running back in football. You don't spend that money. You don't sink that much asset into a guy who is basically like setting screens and rolling, because as much as you don't want to believe that that's something that you can get a better version of, or at least get 90% of it, I mean, you really can. I mean, you can make Montrezl Harrell into 80% of what Clint Capella
is. He's a little small on the defensive end. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but there's so many centers right now, you know?
There's a ton. Yeah, like, we have a glut of centers. And I mean, you know, there have been a few pieces. Danny LaRue wrote a great piece about that, about how no one has any value. I mean, if you look at the difference between Zaza and Bogut for the Warriors, I mean, Bogut was obviously better, but Zaza is so cheap that it gives you money to spend on other stuff that's far more important. I mean, rim protection is one of these things. It's a nebulous term, and it's also overrated. Like, protection at the rim starts with your perimeter defense.
Oh, man.
Which is why.
So true.
Yeah.
Like, that's, right? Like, everyone's like, oh, man, Jokic, he's just going to be this awful, you know, defensive center, and he can't move his feet or whatever. It's like the difference between Denver's defense and the Grizzlies' defense, it's not Jokic and Marc Gasol. It's Tony Allen and fucking Emmanuel Mudiay, who doesn't know what the fuck he's doing.
Or
like Jamal Murray
versus
Mike Conley. Like, it's just it's totally different tiers.
You can't have your guards and your wings dying on every screen.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it. That's like bottom line.
Because once a guy, like, remember, the NBA, like, these guys, even the 15th man on the bench is really good at basketball, and when they get a full head of steam, man, coming downhill, good luck. You're either going to foul them. You're not going to draw many charges, right? And you're either going to foul them or they're going to get a good look at the basket. And it's going to make you look bad. Jokic is, to me, I think he's going to be fine. He's smart as a defender. You can see it on post-entry passes.
He's a basketball savant. I mean,
he is.
Yeah.
On post-entry passes, he's so good at poking the ball away in a way, Draymond Green-esque way that guys that bigs aren't used to dealing with. His hands are really active.
Actually Zaza, because you saw in Golden State this year that what they wanted to do originally with Zaza is play him exactly like Andrew Bogut in pick and rolls, and that was a problem, right? Just because Andrew Bogut, perhaps by reputation rather than ability, really was he spooked people away. Really was a rim protector, at least in terms of the way that someone rolling towards the rim was oh crap, I'm going to get blocked or just eaten alive by Andrew Bogut. And Zaza doesn't inspire that same reaction from people driving to the lane. So what they've started to do with Zaza in pick and rolls that has made him not a complete liability. You remember the first 20 games of the season, everyone was who's going to replace Zaza? Because this isn't going to work. What fixed that is that they played Zaza up a little bit so that positionally he could influence plays without having to be the rim protector, but also just sort of make the decision whether or not he's going to drop on an active basis and not be totally screwed because they have so many good defenders. And that's what Jokic needs. He needs whoever's going to play at point guard and whoever's going to play at shooting guard. And I feel I don't remember his name right now, but they're Gary Harris. Gary Harris is good.
He's going to be good.
Well, he's already a pretty good defender. He was by the end of the Nuggets season, he was averaging 22 points a game, and he really sort of shifted from a defensive 3-and-D guy to one of their better scoring options. But optimally, Gary Harris is not scoring 20 points a game,
No.
So,
no. They could use a Millsap at the 4. That would help Jokic out a lot. The Warriors are so good because they've got Draymond and they've got Kevin Durant as that weak side help. And both of those guys, are able to block shots.
I was about to take us full circle. What Jokic needs is Kawhi and Danny Green.
Well, sure. Yeah. this is where Kyle Lowry, there's a little bit of scuttlebutt about Kyle Lowry possibly winding up in Denver. While I wouldn't want to pay years 3 and 4 of that contract, years 1 and 2, I think could be pretty good on that team. But the problem is I want Jokic to have the ball in his hands as much as possible in offense. And so I feel like you could go out and find – I love Jamal Murray as the point guard there just because of his offense. And I think, as far as the next Steph Curry, Jamal Murray may be the guy who's closest to that, with that instant offense sort of thing. And I like Gary Harris at the 2, but Kyle Lowry is really interesting because as a defender, he's a bulldog. He gets over screens. He's really active and physical with guards. So you don't see him getting blown up a lot in pick and roll.
Well, so this is sort of conjecture because you can't get into the minds of players and validate stuff like this, but at least it's drawing from something that is actually tangible. But I think Jamal Murray is going to end up being the type of guy who's going to put in the thought and get good enough at footwork on defense that he can overcome some of his athletic, whether that's strength or speed. It's honestly both.
Yeah. But he can improve those things. He can improve.
On offense, he's got he's got better footwork at this age than Kobe did at his age, and that's fine. Kobe ended up throughout the course of his career getting better and better, way better than Jamal Murray, by the way. Don't add okay.
Here's the question though: is Jamal Murray the sort of psychopath that Kobe Bryant was? Right, Kobe Bryant was a basketball. You talked about Jokic being a basketball savant. Kobe Bryant was a basketball psychopath.
He is a little bit. He's got this whole, that he's he meditates for an hour and a half a game. That's his muse cage, dog. Jamal Murray, muse cage.
Is he also a storyteller? Like, that's what I need. I need him to tell me a story on the basketball court.
Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah, absolutely. But no, I agree 100%. I think that, you know, the reason why I actually like Kyle Lowry for the Nuggets, I think that people overplayed the degree to which Kyle Lowry in Toronto's offense actually even had the ball in his hands. I think that he worked really well next to DeMar DeRozan because in a lot of possessions, he could just sort of step away and play off ball and shoot, not really spot up threes, although there were plenty, but those type of threes where it's like pump fake, couple steps to the left, and then it's a three. And
sure.
And you could really play things around Jokic in such a way that 60% of possessions, Lowry's probably going to get the ball in his hands because he can make himself open and he's used to it.
Right.
And because Jokic is so much better a passer than DeMar DeRozan anyways, that I feel like something like that could definitely work. It's not like you're talking about Jeff Teague or something where he's really got to have, or Monte Ellis, who, where it's like, okay, yeah, well, yeah, that would be the worst thing to pair next to Jokic.
If I'm Denver, I'm trying to get Patty Mills or Ian Clark.
Man, Patty Mills is already signed with the Timberwolves. It's too late. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Oh. I forgot about that.
Think about it.
I don't want Patty Mills. I want Patty Mills to stay in San Antonio. And honestly, like I think there's a very good chance Tony Parker is going to retire. You know, like at his age, to miss a year of basketball, which is what it's going to be. I just think that he may be done, and I think Manu's probably done. So all of a sudden, the Spurs actually have some cap space, and I think that they could get a deal done with Patty Mills in that 15 to 16 range.
But how are they going to do that if they just signed Chris Paul? That's the question.
They're not signing Chris Paul. I'm so tired of hearing that. I mean, I know you're just egging me on because we've talked about this.
There's no way. But I mean, really, if Chris Paul could just settle down a little bit and like do, if Chris Paul really, hey man, I'm taking off the gloves. I'm going full Stephen A. Smith right here. If Chris Paul really cared about winning, he would sign with the Spurs.
That's preposterous.
No, but right, that's, like
you've got some unmitigated gall to say that Chris Paul doesn't care about winning. No, look, the reality is Chris Paul had this rule change so that he could sign a 5-year max. Right. Like he wants to make $200 million on this next deal, and so he's staying in LA. And
he
honestly,
cared about winning.
the economics of the NBA make it so that it's in LA's best interest. They have to re-sign him to that deal, just like they have to re-sign Blake. And they probably should go ahead and re-sign J.J. Redick because they have no path to contention otherwise. You know, they don't have any good draft picks. You know, they wouldn't – like, if they just didn't sign any of those guys, like, this would be not a smart blow-up.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree.
Better off signing and then trying to move them.
Yeah. No, I agree 100%. I think that if you're Steve Ballmer and you're sitting there and you're like, huh – what am I going to do? Am I going to let this Clippers team really hit rock bottom at the point that the Lakers are finally getting their shit together and just like watch everyone flock away from this franchise that will now return to being a joke? Although we were so close to not being a joke, only
unless you're going to go ahead and move them to Seattle. You know,
that's preposterous, Kenny.
It is preposterous. No, they're not going to move him but Seattle is going to get a team here soon. But yeah, I just think that, you know, all this speculation about Chris Paul signing with the Spurs is ridiculous.
Well, what about Kyle Lowry? We were just talking about him.
I don't like that fit either. Again, man, like DeJounte Murray is the point guard of the future for San Antonio. Now, not the immediate future, but I think they've got Patty Mills. He's already there. I think it's as far as, you know, operating your business, I think it's better to just give Patty Mills the raise. And by the way, it's not even that big of a raise. I think Patty Mills probably winds up taking a little bit of a free agent discount to stay there. Like I said, $15 million. I think he'd get 18 on the open market and stays in San Antonio and he's your starter. And now you've got this continuity. But to me, the bigger question for the Spurs in the offseason, and I know we're kind of jumping the gun a little bit because the playoffs are still happening, but it's, where are you going to – like, Powell is probably opting into that deal, that crazy contract. And where do you try to move LaMarcus Aldridge?
Do you feel like the Spurs might pull some Spurs-type stuff and ask him to not opt into it and say, like, you will be made whole, you know? I feel like they might. I feel like they might do that, and that Powell would acquiesce to it if it's like, we'll give you like a. So he's going to make like $20 million, right? What if they said like,
I think it's 18,
something like that. What if they said like, we'll give you like a 5 year or for like 4 year, $8 million, right? Something like that.
Like
$8 million a year.
Yeah. I don't think they would do that. Because that would be, I think people would really like poo poo that, but I can see them asking him to opt out and saying, hey, you know what? Sign a 2 year or a 1 year and a 1-1, we'll go 10 and 10. Right.
Well, like, dude, so that's, I feel like people would like poo poo it, but you remember the whole Beno Udre thing?
Yeah. Okay. But
I mean,
but,
like it's a precedent has been set. I mean, it
right.
Like, well, people might get a little edgy, but I mean,
I think the new CBA kind of tackles that a little bit. I got to dive into it. I've been saving that for the summer, but I feel like there's something there, but you know, look, if I'm the Spurs, I don't want Powell to opt in, you know,
that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, the reason why you would even go to Powell and say, hey, opt out so that we can do this other thing is because you're right. It looks like Tony Parker might retire. Manu might be done. If Pau Gasol opts out, you've got the type of space that you need to make a really big signing. And
sure.
I mean, really, I feel like the Spurs could just be totally revamped in the type of way where it's like, well, I really like how Kyle Lowry could fit into the Spurs system. I could see something like that happening. Another interesting option that might be a little bit cheaper is that, tell me, so Mike Budenholzer, what system did he come from originally? What was that?
Came from the Spurs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, so who was the starting point guard? Just refresh my memory. Who was the starting point guard on that 62-win Hawks?
You're talking about Jeff Teague?
Oh, wait, Jeff Teague. Oh, well, is he a free agent?
Jeff Teague?
Yeah, no.
I think that would be a terrible idea.
I sort of like it. Well, do you like that for like, what about like 16, 18 million?
No, I'd rather have Patty Mills at 16 than Jeff Teague at 16.
Well, I mean, you'd probably keep both, but.
I don't know. You'd have to do some really serious cap gymnastics to get both. But
well,
also,
not if you have
I think
50 million to spend.
I think Patty Mills should be the starter next year for them. I mean, I really do. I felt that way all year. About him. I mean, I understand because you kind of have Manu and Tony Parker that at this point in their careers were basically like the same guy. So you couldn't play them both off the bench. So I understand that, like sort of staggering them. But yeah, I don't think you need, I think Jeff Teague would be a bit redundant because I want to see more DeJounte Murray next season. Now that's just me. Like Pop probably wants DeJounte Murray to continue to play in the D League, you know, or the G League. And, you know, maybe he plays 3 minutes a night, you know, for the next four seasons, like, you know, like Pop is apt to do with guys like Corey Joseph and Patty Mills.
I like that strategy, though, because when you're a team like the Spurs and the Mavericks do this, too, you don't just throw guys into a system without being sort of basted in it, without sort of growing up within it, because when you put enough youth, when you put enough raw players into a system, eventually the system ceases to exist. It breaks it,
sure,
right?
Absolutely.
You can only have so many people. Like, once you have five guys who make mistakes 20% of the time, that system's dead.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and so, like, one of my pet peeves this playoffs has been no Dwayne Dedman. And I'm thinking that there's something that I don't know. Like, there's got to be some other reason that I – because it's not about how he plays on the court. So there must be something else, right? Like, and so like I'll take all these, like I'll give all these criticisms of what Pop is doing with a big grain of salt because it has worked out so far, right? Like he seems to know what he's doing.
Yeah.
21 years of 50 plus wins. Like I just assume that he's got his finger on the pulse of what's happening. But I just think that DeJounte Murray's ceiling is so high. Then I'm being impatient.
I think you like DeJounte Murray a lot more than I do.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I mean, he's 6'5", and he can finish and he can shoot a little bit. I'm a sucker for those kind of guys. I also love Pat McCaw, right? Like I want Pat McCaw to get big minutes next year. I don't think he's ready to start, but they started him a lot this year. I think Kerr's like the other side of the coin. Kerr, in order to keep his rotations fresh, will grab a guy who never plays and throw him in the starting lineup. And I think that that's an interesting way to do it. Yeah. That's trial by fire, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, you can manage to do that when you have the type of talent that Steve Kerr does. I mean, the Spurs just aren't that good. The Spurs
definitely do not have that talent. Yet.
Right, yeah.
So who wants LaMarcus Aldridge? New York?
Oh, man, are we playing trade machine a little bit?
Yeah, we are. This is my favorite thing to talk about with you because you're good at this.
Yeah, well, Chris Stapps, you can get him to tweet San Antonio smiley face.
Porzingis for Aldridge.
Yeah, right.
So Aldridge and Danny Green for Porzingis. Aldridge, Danny Green, DeJounte Murray. You think Phil Jackson takes that deal?
How about everyone on the Spurs except Kawhi for Porzingis?
Let's see.
What type of team would take... I was thinking this the other day. I think the type of team that would spring for a guy like LaMarcus, Chicago Bulls.
That's interesting. Yeah, I agree with you. I think that those guys are off... just enough to know or to not know that they shouldn't do it.
They're like 5 or 10 years they're 5 or 10 years in the past in terms of like basketball philosophy.
Yeah. Although LaMarcus would probably help them quite a bit if he's playing the five.
Yeah.
He would probably help them.
Hey, now you're talking Mr. Spurs right. GM right now. Yeah. He would totally help them quite a bit. I agree 100%.
Yeah. Well, it was sort of what they were trying to do with Bobby Portis. Where they were playing him 4-5, trying to get him to stretch the floor a little bit. But LaMarcus would be better on offense. I think he'd be better on defense, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Robin Lopez still has a year left on that deal, right?
Well, I don't think LaMarcus is going to be – I think that the problem with playing LaMarcus at center isn't that he couldn't do it. It's that he'll pout and not do it well.
Right. So he's been doing it for the most part for the Spurs all season. Like he guarded centers when he was out there, except for when he was with Deadman. And a little bit with Powell, but he guarded centers for a large
portion. So do you think that the Bulls could make him do that?
Oh yeah, probably not. It's like, Mike D'Antoni couldn't get Dwight Howard to run pick and rolls for who was, the greatest pick and roll ball handler in NBA history and Steve Nash. And
I
couldn't
get say Jeremy Lin.
No.
Yeah,
no, but he couldn't get him to do it. Couldn't get Melo to
play small ball four. I mean, he wanted Melo to run pick and roll. That would have been so sexy. That New York team could have been so good if they weren't a bunch of dicks.
But this is the problem with the NBA. For all of the gripes that people have with the NBA, the biggest problem is when guys will not allow themselves to be coached.
Bunch of divas.
Right. It's not like Mike D'Antoni isn't, Mike D'Antoni is probably one of the 10 best coaches in NBA history. To me, the reason that the NBA is as good as it is now is because of a lot of the concepts that Mike D'Antoni brought in. Everyone's using his stuff.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I watched sort of the development of the whole D'Antoni thing starting from my Mavericks, Don Nelson, wasn't stretch fours until Dirk, right? And he sort of popularized that whole thing. They played super fast. Steve Nash, he was part of Don Nelson's system.
That's right.
And then I think very much so that Mike D'Antoni sort of continued living and sort of basing in that whole thing. And then, what the Warriors are doing is an interesting blend of like really what I think are the two best philosophies of the last decade and a half. I mean, it's half Spurs and half D'Antoni, and it's compelling, I think,
Yeah. And the parts that are D'Antoni don't even involve the pick and roll, right? Like, cause they actually run fewer pick and rolls than just about anybody in the league. So they've got a lot of off ball movement. It's true.
Don't run a lot of high pick and rolls.
No, but they run a lot of screens, but not on ball screens.
Yeah, I mean,
right. So the pin down stuff is
they
very
definitely don't do. I think people who don't actually watch basketball, but maybe play NBA 2K or something like that, like think that they're running high pick and rolls with Draymond and Steph, but like they're not really.
No. They hardly ever run a freaking on ball pick and roll. Like they hardly ever run on ball picks. They screen like crazy though, away from the ball. Like almost every play they're running a pin down, which every good modern offense runs pin down screens. But their thing with the D'Antoni stuff is getting the ball up court. Like, that's the underrated part about D'Antoni that people don't realize. The Spurs do it as well. They're not dribbling the ball up court, Chris Paul style, crossing the line at 17 seconds, getting into their sets at 12 seconds, and then and next seconds thing you know, having like,
less.
Well, sure, yes. But I'm saying, like, you know, a lot of teams, they run their stuff, and it's like at 8 seconds, they're freaking starting their actions.
I hate that.
Yeah. And that, back to the game. That's what started happening. You know, they devolved into that at the end of the fourth quarter and in overtime. And part of that, I think, was just fatigue, man. Those guys looked dead. James Harden, like, has been so good all year. But, man, I wish he had played, like, 72 games instead of 81.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if it's that. I think it's sometimes I think with James Harden, part of it is that he's sort of a fat kid. And not, I mean, he's the most athletic fat kid there is, but he's not, he's almost like not a natural athlete. Or he's not a natural long distance runner, at least.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Sure.
Put into this position where he, I mean, you know, there's always the thing where in terms of, there's that system the NBA has where, what is it called when the player tracking, what is that called?
Yeah. Sport view?
Right. His sport view data on James Harden says that he moves less than every other player in the league, basically. And I you know, while that's true, I do think that it's such a demanding job to orchestrate. I think maybe it's almost like he's spending half of his energy just in his brain.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I can buy that. You know, and also the physiological difference between every human being. Like, my wife runs marathons. I'm not running any marathons. I'm not built for that.
You know, Dave, I don't know. You look like a marathon runner. I could see that.
No, I'm 5'10", 195, man. Like, I'm built to be a NFL running back, not to run marathons, man. Like, no way. But, you know, like, I mean, there are physiological differences between people. So we can't expect just because someone trains. And, like, it's not like James Harden doesn't train. Like, the guy does train. Yeah. He got a bad rap last year for coming in out of shape. But people forget he had a severe ankle injury that really, like, limited how much training he could do. So, yeah, he came in out of shape because he was hurt.
Yeah.
And he still and had
some. He had some really bad KS, you know. The Kardashian syndrome, you know. Like, he was just.
Sure.
I mean, those yachts, man, you know, all that champagne.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, shrimp and champagne will get you fat, right? But, you know, I just think, like, and he still had an all-NBA, what should have been an all-NBA season last year. You know, the guy was freaking ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
And so,
did they keep him off the all-NBA team?
Oh, yeah, he didn't get it. It's insane.
Yeah, that's dumb.
It's all narrative-driven, man. It's all narrative-driven because these awards are voted on by people that don't watch the games. This is why, like, I mean, not to go to the MVP because I hate it, but this is why Russell Westbrook is going to win MVP. Although there are certainly people that watched him play that think he should be MVP, but I think a lot of the people that voted for him just never watched him.
So let's close it here. So I think that if you're prioritizing basketball in terms of what it like philosophically what you want from basketball in terms of, you know, like we were saying, like beautiful game type thing, right? James Harden's the guy. He was the, I mean, honestly, if the Warriors didn't exist, the numbers, the offensive efficiency, the mechanic, the basically robotic dismantling of NBA defenses that the Rockets did this year is unprecedented asterisk, except for the Warriors, right?
Right, yes.
And I think that as the clear number one guy, he was clearly such a big component of that. What was the best NBA offense ever that, yeah, he was the MVP. But when you look back on the season, this was the season of Westbrook, right?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. But again, look at the usage. I mean,
I just sort of think that it's not about that.
I'm with you. He definitely owned the season. You know, Bill Simmons talked about it on his podcast. Like, when we think back to this season, we will remember KD on the Warriors, and we will remember Russell Westbrook annihilating the world. But I think that winning games has to matter.
I think the MVP trophy is a trophy, you know? Like, it's you know, it was the year of Westbrook, so Westbrook should win the MVP. I think that, you know, if you want to be a purist, then James Harden is definitely the guy, if only because of some statistical noise with Kawhi. So I would probably have given my vote to Kawhi because I look
That's me too. I'm imaginarily voted for Kawhi.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that if you're being a purist, you probably have to give it to Harden, though, right?
Well, I take Kawhi because I think that what he did on offense was like every bit as impressive given the pieces around him, and his defense is just next level. I mean, yes, I know that some of the signal noise, but we still don't have good metrics for defense anyway.
Yeah.
But the eye test on his defense is outstanding. And
now you've muddied the waters, man. We're talking eye test. Not gonna be able to carry him
to a 2 seed and 60 plus wins. That's what I'm looking at.
Yeah, well, so that's
like I have Steph Curry in my top five.
That's the thing too. Honestly, I think if Kevin Durant hadn't gotten injured, he had to be the MVP. If that's the way that you're going to approach it, but I just think that ultimately. The MVP thing, the MVP argument is like, well, you know, who was the player of the year, basically? Like,
sure.
who was like, it's like a gold sticker accomplishment, right? But yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, if I was starting a franchise, I would take James Harden before I would take Westbrook. And that's sort of, and honestly, if I wanted to win a championship, I would take Harden before I would take Westbrook. But that's not, I think, what the MVP trophy is about. I think it's just sort of like a, you know, like blue ribbon. Woo! You know, you did it.
Right. Well, this goes back to, you know, stuff that I've been talking about since, you know, last offseason, where I would actually change the way that, like, I would change the awards, right? Like, I would just change them up. Like, instead of most improved, I would call it breakout player. Because most improved, oftentimes, is just a guy that gets more minutes. Well, that's it. Like CJ McCollum won the award last year. His per minute numbers were the same. His counting stats went up because he got more minutes. And people just look at those counting stats like, whoa, where'd that come from? He was doing the exact same thing.
I'm about to offend you a little bit right now.
Uh-oh.
How much Blazers did you watch?
I watched a decent amount, but like I didn't watch.
CJ
you know,
was
they're
a
not
much better player. CJ was taking much more difficult shots and was except for Damian Lillard, of course, he made the jump into being a superstar, and that has more to
this
do with
year
just
or last year.
Last year,
right? Okay.
I mean, last year he made the transition from being a player that is around Damian Lillard to being another fulcrum in making the Trailblazers work, and so
okay.
I think that it was. I understand that argument, but I think that
I think he was the most improved last year. Like, I mean, it takes something to sustain those per minute numbers over more minutes. But like this year, I had people arguing like for Jokic over Giannis.
Yeah, that's a really good example. Like Jokic is doing what he's done, except he's just being liberated to do it.
Exactly. Whereas Giannis, the guy went from whatever to possibly a top five player, right?
Like, okay, yeah. So
that's a better example of my argument.
Yeah, no, 100%. I agree totally. Like Giannis is just like a different player and a better one,
right?
An improved.
So I'm even down for saying like the NFL, like, all right, this is the most outstanding, like offensive most outstanding player. You know, defensive player of the year is already sort of like that, right? But like. Call it the offensive player of the year. Don't call it MVP.
Yeah.
Because MVP is such a misnomer for what Russell Westbrook is.
And I think that there should be like a shadowy cabal, like a Illuminati of people who think a lot about basketball. Maybe like me, you, Coach Nick, Danny LaRue, Jonathan Charks. And just us.
Adam Morris.
Oh, right. Yeah, Adam Morris. Okay, so the six of us, and we should decide MVP. Because
yes.
Like, I get why it has to be media as opposed to players or as opposed to coaches or as opposed to whatever, but it needs to be smart media.
It needs to be people who are thinking next level stuff. Like, I mean, you know, Adam Mares and
Ben Golliver,
we could probably get good people, man. Like, there's look, there's a lot of smart people that are doing some next level thinking about basketball. But like Adam Mares, you know, like he wrote this great thing on Vice. Yeah, he wrote this great thing on Vice last Friday. So I mean, guys, Google it. And he actually hit me up when he was working on it because we've talked a lot about the evolution of basketball. And I used to argue that basketball, like as far as terms of value, it was like 60% offense, 40% defense, right? Like, so, you know, if you had a guy, like a better offensive player that could give you, you know, 40% or whatever on defense was fine. But now it's even swung even more because the offenses have such a huge advantage. Defense is really being marginalized, and they may make some rule changes here. Like one is that that reach in that they keep calling a shooting foul around the screen, the three pointer. Like I expect that to go away, and that'll help even the playing field out a little bit more. But I think it's like 75-25 as far as value.
I think the sneaky reason why that's become so much the case, where offense is prioritized over defense to even a further extent, is Dennis Rodman shouldn't have been able to start on a championship team. He should have been Tony Allen, but there was illegal defense, right? I mean,
sure.
Well, I mean, shouldn't. He couldn't.
He's the greatest rebounder in history, man. Like, he was so good. And he was a good defender.
Like, do you see this jersey up here?
Yeah.
Do you know what that jersey is?
Yeah, I see that.
Do you know what that is? It's a Dennis Rodman jersey. Right. Like, I love Dennis Rodman, but I mean, like, if he was in the NBA right now, he would struggle to stay on the court because of the same reasons that Tony Allen, like, can't be on the court. It's like, offensively, you can't just stand in the corner and pull your man. That man will break your offense on the other side of the court.
Right. It's like Luke Richard and Mbamute, right? Like, you know, although he did shoot like 42% on corner threes this year, right? Like, that's the trick. Like, guys like the Tony Allen types and the Mbamutes, they just need to be able to hit the corner three and then they can be playable.
Yeah. Caesar said that done Andre Roberson.
I feel like Rodman could have done it, though.
Hit a corner three?
Yeah, I feel like Rodman could have become a consistent corner three-point shooter. But remember, the league was just different back then. And what he brought on the defensive end and rebounding, I think, was so valuable. Remember, like, he was grabbing, like, you know, five offensive rebounds a game. Like, he was ridiculous. Back in a time when they still valued offensive rebounds.
Dude, he got, like, 30 rebounds a game. I mean, he's one of the best players ever. I was sort of making a point, you know? Rodman value versus Tony Allen. Like, the fact that Tony Allen was unplayable recently was sort of an indication of the type of dynamic that I was talking about.
I agree. Yeah, no, I'm with you. The way the league is moving, those defense-only guys are going away. It's sort of like in baseball, you can't have a slap hitting shortstop or second baseman anymore, right? Like, those are power
baseball because it's a peasant sport.
Well, anyway, so it used to be first and third used to be like your guys that had to hit home runs. Well, now everybody has to hit a home run.
Oh yeah, well, right? you know what was a home run? This podcast. All right,
agreed.
Because my guest, Coach Dave Ufor, and it's numeral four, right?
It is, well, yeah, it's spelled D-U-F-O-U-R, but on Twitter I use D-U and then the numeral four, yeah.
Right, and that's an important thing to mention, because if you're listening to this and you're not following is it Coach Dave?
Coach Dave Ufor, yeah.
Okay, but are there any underscores there?
No or underscores.
Things, are there spaces or anything?
It's underscore. No, there's no underscores. It's Coach Dave Ufor and D-U and the numeral four.
I wish I had a screen capture of the face you made. Like, it's underscore. Like, that was beautiful. All right, so go follow Coach Dave.
You millennials.
Make sure.
Blame that on your millennialism.
Yeah, no, and that's why you should follow at Almighty Ballin, despite my youth and relative inexperience, because I do things like think about basketball on a higher conceptual level and teach Coach Dave, despite not being a coach myself, about tug of war.
I wouldn't
think about that.
Hold on. Now, this is something that I've actually talked about already, but I like your term for it. I'm going to steal your term.
No, no. And that's also why you should subscribe to his podcast and make sure you listen to all of the Fixing the NBA's Problems with Coach Nick, because he has penultimate basketball wisdom. If you want to know more about the sport, which you wouldn't be listening to this show if you didn't, then you need to make sure that you follow at Coach Dave DeFore, that you subscribe to his podcast on the NBA with Coach Dave, and that you listen to him on Coach Nick's podcast over at B-Ball Breakdown each time there's Fixing the NBA's Problem. And that is how you plug a guest at the end of a podcast. Did you hear that shit right there?
That was pretty excellent. Yeah.